Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the TomTom third quarter 2010 earnings conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. We will be facilitating a question and answer session towards the end of today's prepared remarks, at which time, if you would like to ask a question, you may do so by pressing star 1 on your telephone. If at any time during the call you require audio assistance, feel free to press star 0 and a conference coordinator will be happy to assist you. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to your host for today's conference, Richard Piekaar, Manager, Investor Relations. You may begin.
Good afternoon and good morning to those of you joining from North America. Welcome to our conference call in which we will discuss our financial results for the third quarter of 2010. With me today are Harold Goddijn, our CEO, and Marina Wyatt, our CFO. By now, you should have received a copy of our earnings release, which was distributed earlier today. It is also available on our website. Additionally, this call is being broadcast live on our website, and a recording of the call will be available shortly afterwards. I would also like to mention that we will have our Capital Markets Day on 11th of November. If you did not receive an invitation, please send me an email and I will make sure you will get one. As usual, I would like to point out that Safe Harbor applies. We will start with Harold, who will talk about the market developments and the business review, followed by a more detailed look at the quarterly financial results from Marina. We will then take your questions. We will finish at 3 o'clock. I would now like to turn the call over to Harold.
Thank you very much, Richard. Good afternoon. And I would like to start to give you a few highlights. In the quarter, our consumer unit performed well. A challenging market environment with softening prices was compensated by P&D market share growth and growth in consumer content and services sales. We also started shipping towards the end of the quarter our latest P&D premium range, and we have announced a new mid-range P&D solution. Further highlights were the announcements of the new automotive contracts, as well as the continued pan-European rollout of our live services, which is enabling more people in more countries to take advantage of our superior HD traffic and other services. At the end of the quarter, we had over 1 million active users of our live services. In the quarter, we supported our pan-European rollout of our live services with the shipment of the new connected premium ranges P&Ds to Go Live 1000. And in addition, we announced the connected Via Life, our new mid-range. Both new products will give further impetus to our connectivity push across 33 countries now in Europe. In September, we announced new contracts in the automotive industry. We will supply Mazda with a connected in-dash multimedia navigation solution, and Mazda will offer the solution as an option on its new Mazda 5 in Europe. We've also extended our partnership with Renault, who will be offering our first fully connected in-dash navigation system, including HD traffic and other services to these customers. And finally, together with Sony, we announced that we will collaborate to bring Sony's new connected XPLOT AV navigation system to the market. Our business unit, Business Solutions, which was previously known to you as TomTom Work, continues to grow its subscriber base. In the quarter, 7,000 net subscribers were added to the base, which grew to 122,000, and that is an increase of 40% year on year. In the quarter, Business Solutions introduced the new Pro series of P&Ds, combining our cross-platform technology with Business Solutions specific features. A new solution that we introduced, Eco Plus, enables businesses to measure and subsequently reduce their fuel costs and carbon footprint. On slide 5, you can see our P&D market share in Europe and North America in the third quarter of 2010. In Europe, our market share grew from 45% in the third quarter of last year to 48% this year. And in North America, market share grew from 20% to 25%. Year on year. Sequentially, our market shares decreased by 1 percentage point in Europe and increased by 2 percentage points in North America. The market size in Europe was 3.4 million units compared to 3.8 million units in the third quarter of last year. And in North America, the market size was 2.8 million units compared to 3.1 million units in the same quarter in the previous years. Sequentially, the market size in Europe increased from 3.1 million to 3.4 million units, and in North America, a sequential decrease of 3.4 to 2.8 million units. Despite competition from new consumer electronics categories and some tightness in the supply of certain components like LCD panels, we're looking forward to a high-volume fourth quarter, which brings me now to the outlook. We are on track to achieve the full-year guidance that we gave at the start of the year of broadly flat revenue and earnings per share. In 2009, we reported revenue of 1.5 billion euro and earnings per share of 47 euro cents. And with that, I would like now to hand over to Marina, who will give you more color on our financial results.
Thank you, Harold. I would like to start with the revenue analysis of the group on slide 7. Group revenue in the quarter increased by 3% year over year to 375 million euros and sequentially increased by 4% from 362 million. The revenue split between hardware and content and services saw a small increase in the contribution of content and services from 23% of total revenue in the third quarter last year to 24% this year. Content and services revenue grew in consumer from mobile, maps, and live services sales, and in automotive from map licensing, which was partially offset by a decrease in licensing revenue to third parties, which was mainly due to lower third-party P&D map sales. Consumer revenue was flat year-on-year at 293 million euro, with limited price declines in hardware offset by strong volumes and an increase in content and service sales. Automotive revenue increased by 48% year-on-year to 41 million euro, mainly as a result of the Renault contract, but also the continued growth of automotive map licensing sales. Sequentially, revenue decreased by 7%, because of the slower summer period in production across some of our automotive partners. Business solutions revenue grew year-on-year by 3.4 million euro, or 37%, to 12.5 million, driven both by additional hardware sales and increased revenue from subscriptions. Sequentially, in business solutions, revenue was flat because of the seasonally slower summer period. If we now turn to the earnings overview, the gross margin for the group was 48%, which was a decrease from 52% in the third quarter last year and a sequential decrease of 3 percentage points. The reduction in gross margin was broadly caused by three factors. The US dollar was, on average, stronger compared to the euro. We also saw the impact of the deferral of high-margin revenue related to services, so live services, which are bundled on our P&Ds. Thirdly, but to a lesser extent, there were changes in both product and regional mix, which affected the gross margin. In the quarter, total operating expenses were 123 million euro, which was an increase of 1% or 2 million compared to the same quarter last year because of higher R&D expenses. And sequentially, operating expenses were 12 million euro lower, mainly due to lower marketing and R&D expenses. Operating profit for the quarter decreased year on year by 21% to 55 million euro because of the lower gross margin. Sequentially, operating profit increased by 11%. As a percentage of revenue, the operating result was 15% compared to 19% in the same period last year and 14% in the previous quarter. In the quarter, we incurred a 6.2 million euro net interest expense on our term loan revolving credit facility and cash balances. Amortization of the transaction costs related to the facility amounted to 2.4 million euro. And due to our decision to repay 125 million of our term loan ahead of its due date at the end of December, we recorded a one-off non-cash charge of 0.8 million euro due to the IFRS treatment of our floating fixed interest swap. The total interest expense for the third quarter was 9.5 million euro compared to 9 million in the previous quarter and 27 million in the same quarter last year. As our PND sales in the second half of the year are skewed to the fourth quarter, we carry a significant level of options and forwards securing our dollar-denominated purchase commitments, and we carry these in the third quarter. While the relatively strong US dollar compared to the euro in the quarter negatively impacted our gross margin, the significant weakening of the US dollar against the euro towards the end of the quarter negatively impacted our foreign exchange results. This, in combination with our seasonally high level of option and forward contracts, resulted in a financial charge of 20 million euro, of which a significant part was non-cash. The income tax charge was 5.5 million euro, an effective tax rate of  22.4%. This compares to a tax rate of 24% in the third quarter of last year and 22.4% in the previous quarter. Net profit in the quarter was 19 million euro compared to 31 million in the same quarter last year and down 37%. Fully diluted earnings per share were 0.09, down from 0.14 in the same quarter last year and 0.15 in the previous quarter. Diluted adjusted earnings per share for the quarter were 0.14 compared to 0.20 for the same period last year and 0.21 in the previous quarter. And for adjusted earnings per share, we adjust earnings for acquisition-related amortization and restructuring charges on a post-tax basis. I've put a slide in to try to explain a little bit more, give more color on the foreign exchange impact and how it impacted our gross margin and other finance results. So the exchange rates we use to translate the P&L are average exchange rates for the month. For revaluing our balance sheet positions, we use the month-end exchange rate. And the movement in the exchange rates explains why the euro-dollar exchange rates had a negative impact on our gross margin in the quarter, while the strengthening of the euro against the US dollar towards the end of the quarter had a negative impact on our other finance results. So in the table, you can see the currency exchange rates we used for our P&L and our balance sheet. And if you look at the US dollar, we see a strengthening of the dollar compared to the previous year from 1.46 euro to 1.27 in relation to our P&L. And then on the balance sheet, we see a weakening from 1.23 at the start of the quarter to 1.36 at the end of the quarter. And this is what explains the foreign exchange impact on these results. Turning to operating expenses, total operating expenses as a percentage of revenue for the quarter were stable at 33% of revenue, compared with 33% in the same quarter last year and 37% in the previous quarter. R&D expenses were 36 million, which was 3.8 million lower than the previous quarter and 5.1 million higher compared to the same quarter last year. The year-on-year increase is basically because of increased investment levels, as we already said would happen in 2010. The quarterly decrease was the result of non-recurring items in the second quarter. Marketing expenses showed a year-on-year decrease in the quarter of 4 million to 17 million euro. Sequentially, marketing expenses were down by 7 million, which really represents the seasonal pattern of the business. And we expect marketing spend overall for the full year to increase compared to last year, and marketing will be at a much higher level in Q4 than we have seen in Q3. SG&A expenses for the quarter amounted to 47 million euro, compared to 48 million in the previous quarter and 46 million in the same quarter last year. They included this quarter a one-off gain of 4 million following the settlement of a legal dispute. Stock compensation expenses for the quarter were 4.6 million, up from $3.6 million in the third quarter last year and $3.2 million in the previous quarter. Amortization of technology and databases for the quarter decreased from $19 million in the third quarter last year to $18 million this year as a result of technology acquisitions in the past that have now been fully amortized, partially offset by our investments in new technology. On slide 11, you'll find the cash flow overview. In the third quarter, the cash generated from operations was €63 million, and the net cash from operations was €43 million. Cash flow used in investing activities increased slightly to €16 million compared to the same quarter in the previous year at €14 million, and was up €4 million compared to the previous quarter. In the quarter, we also saw a net decrease in cash and cash equivalents of €99 million to €268 million, but that was because of the early repayment of €125 million of borrowings, and without the early repayment, cash would have increased by €24 million. Turning to the balance sheet, receivables, prepayments, and financial instruments decreased from €315 million to €291 million. The inventory level continued to be at a relatively low level of €80 million, which was up from the €63 million in the previous quarter and €78 million in the same quarter last year. Other liabilities decreased by €14 million to €253 million, and trade payables were up by €6 million. On slide 13, you'll find the financial overview. What you see is in the third quarter, we made an early repayment of €125 million. Closing cash on hand was €268 million. And net debt $416 million. The leverage ratio of 1.2 is well within our covenant, and we also have a $174 million undrawn revolving credit facility. That concludes the formal part of the meeting, and we'd now like to start with the Q&A session, please, operator.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the hash key or pound sign. If you are using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star and one. Our first question is from Stuart Jeffrey from Nomura.
Hi there. Thank you very much. Questions on the PND market, please. The rate of decline in Europe seems to have eased quite a bit year on year in Q3, from down 16% in Q2 to down 8% in Q3. Do you think that's just an aberration, or do you think that that is a sign of the market starting to stabilize? And as you spoke in the past about launching innovations to drive the overall market, when would you expect those to start having an impact on the overall market? And secondly, could you just take us through some of the product mix shifts? You've alluded to some impacts on gross margin, but also perhaps what the impact has been on ASPs and what other trends you've been seeing. I think there's been less interest in 3.5-inch screens, for example. Do you think that's a sign of smartphone cannibalization or competition, or is it just a case that the 4.5, 5-inch screens are just that much cheaper that you can start to push them through? Thank you.
Sure. Thank you very much. I got the second question I didn't fully get, sorry for that, but I'll start with the first one. PND market size in Europe declined 8%, as you rightly said. Is that a sign of easing market decline? Difficult to say at this stage. What we do see is that around the driving season, we see strong demand for navigation devices. We benefited from that. It is unclear what the, or not entirely clear what Q4 will start doing in terms of market size development. But what we do see is that PNDs are continuing to doing relatively well, and they are coexisting with what's happening on mobile phones, and we expect that to continue. Your third question about product mix change, I think what Marina was referring to is that in Q3 this year, the shipment of new devices started late in the quarter. new devices carry normally a higher gross margin, and if we compare it to the situation last year, we benefited nearly the whole quarter of shipments of new devices. So that had a some effect on the gross margin and explains partially the gross margin decline in Q3 on a year-on-year basis. What we also see in the market is that there is relatively bigger demand for larger screen devices, and the 3.5-inch sector is declining. But the 4.3 and also the 5-inch market is growing, and that is a good development for us. It also means that if customers are prepared to pay for those larger screens, we can have more information on those screens, which is particularly important with dynamic guidance and traffic information. It delivers higher value to our customers. It also creates more clear water between what you can do on a PND and on a mobile phone. So in general, that trend is started some 12 months ago, and that is not reducing. We see more and more of our business shifting to the larger screen sizes. And the second question you, Marina, maybe you can answer that one.
Yeah, I think you were asking about innovation, I think, was the theme there, but maybe you can just elaborate a little.
You said in the past that the market's been a bit soft, and partially that was your fault because you hadn't been as innovative to drive replacement and adoption. And obviously you've now announced new products. I was wondering when you would expect people to become sort of aware of the innovation. Maybe that's driven by third-party application developers producing things, or maybe it's just live services. I'm just trying to get a feel for, you know, what you think is the key innovation and when it starts to impact the market.
Yeah, I think what we've done with our new platform is really paved the way for further innovation and acceleration of that innovation. We've seen, you know, a larger proportion of the products we are shipping now come with connectivity built in. That in itself is highly relevant for us. The dynamic guidance component of what we're doing is getting better and better. So we can really claim now in very robustly that with a TomTom you get to your destination faster, especially when there is congestion. Combination of AG traffic, IQ routes, and the new routing engine also that we introduced in our new devices in combination with continuous rerouting really deliver a better user experience. But the connectivity itself and the way we can communicate with those devices is also opening the way for new services. So the communication is based on an IP protocol now, both on the PC and over the air, and that means that we have a much richer opportunity for implementing new services and do it in an incremental way. And that is important because it increases the relevance of our product category for our customers.
The only thing I'd also add to that is, I mean, clearly in the fourth quarter we're going to back up what we're doing on the product front with, you know, a higher level of investment in the brand and in advertising than we saw last year to kind of reinforce and get our messages across.
Great. Thank you.
Our next question is from Robert Owens from J.P. Morgan.
Hello. Thanks for that. Couple of questions from my end. You very kindly split out the impact on the gross margin from currency, but I wonder, would you be able to do the same in terms of the deferred revenue? And then secondly, in terms of OpEx, just looking at the marketing expense, what do you think really here is a base level? What's the kind of discretionary element of this? And then maybe just a quick follow-up if I've got time. Thanks.
Okay. If we talk about deferred revenue, in a nutshell, the impact on our gross margin from deferring, I mean, what we have to do is when we sell a device that comes with a year's free services in it, free live services in it, we need to defer a portion of the revenue, and it's a meaningful portion of the revenue. We have to defer that and defer the associated cost of sales, and it's high margin. And the impact of that was a little bit more than 1% of, if you like, the reduction in gross margin year on year.
Okay.
And that revenue gets deferred into the balance sheet and then gets released over the, you know, the one-year life.
Okay, got it. And then it's
okay, and then on marketing, your question was how much of it is discretionary, I think. Is that,
yes.
Is that probably what you... Yeah, I mean, it's if you look at the kind of quarterly run rate that you've seen from us this year... You know, marketing this quarter was about 17 million. It was 15 in Q1, a bit over 20 in Q2. So, you know, anything, and in those quarters, there's a limited amount, there's a small amount of above the line. But really, once you get anything over and above that, think of that as investment in discretionary amounts.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, thanks. And then just quickly, in terms of the U.S. market, declining 10% year over year, so it's like, acceleration and that decline. Is there any, I mean, did this surprise you at all? Are you thinking about the U.S. market differently for Q4?
You know, we have to wait and see how Q4 develops. It's the biggest quarter. I mean, yeah, clearly we did see a decrease in Q3. And again, you know, I think part of that story there is the market needs innovation. You know, retailers need to get excited about the category again. And I think it's important that that starts to happen to give something, you know, to get them excited about it. Q4, we need to see how, you know, how the market develops there. And, you know, it's difficult to tell at this stage.
Okay, that's great. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Cheers.
Our next question is from Ashish Sinha from Morgan Stanley.
Hi, this is Ashish from Morgan Stanley. Just a couple of quick ones, if I may. On gross margins, seasonally, 4Q gross margins decline quarter on quarter, basically promotions and mix there. Now, for this year, however, the 3Q base has been distorted by FX, the dollar-euro in the third quarter, and this is somewhat reversed, as you pointed out. But given all the moving parts, how should we be thinking about fourth quarter gross margins sequentially? Then secondly, can you also talk a little bit about the recently announced Mazda in-dash deal? What are the rollout plans by Mazda models and by geographies, and what's the time frame for that? And for this business, do you anticipate similar attach rates to what you've seen in the Renault deal? And lastly, about fourth quarter visibility, since we're already a few weeks into the quarter, it's most likely that holiday sales tie-ups with channel partners, distributors, retailers, all of that would have been mostly agreed upon. Should we expect market share gains similar to what we saw in Q4 last year? Thank you.
Okay, well, let me start with Q4 gross margins. Now, obviously, I can't be explicit about that, but you know, the normal seasonal pattern is that in Q4, we have our biggest revenue quarter, and we have our lowest gross margin quarter because of the fact that, you know, it's characterized by a high level of P&D sales in the mix and a high level of holiday activity. You know, this year, Q4 will be our biggest quarter of the year. And, you know, I would expect the trend on gross margin in that it will be the lowest gross margin quarter of the year. I would expect us to have that. Having said that, you know, if we look at the dollar rate today, that's in our favor compared with last quarter. And if you look at how we performed in Q4 last year, our gross margin was 46%. So, it wasn't down at levels as we've seen in previous years. So I'd expect it to be down, but hopefully not by too much. The other comment I'll make before I hand back to Harold is that traditionally in the fourth quarter in the North American market, that's a quarter when, you know, TomTom has performed well in terms of market share, with the strongest market share that it records in the year being in the fourth quarter. And again, this year, you know, we would expect to have a strong market share in Q4 in North America.
Okay, thank you, Marina. So on the Mazda deal, that's the beginning of a relationship. The first model we're going to equip with a navigation and multimedia solution will be the Mazda 5. That's a European reach we get with that car. And hopefully we can extend our relationship with Mazda from there on. It will not, before that starts to become material revenue, that will take some time.
Okay, and lastly about the fourth quarter visibility. I mean, some of the tie-ups we've been seeing last year. Any comments on that?
No, not really. I think, you know, it's too early to say, other than that retailers at the moment are behaving as we expect, so no surprises. But the real judgment can only come after the shopping season has happened. So on the, with the retailers, we are executing according to our plans. And for the sellout, we need to see and what's going to happen.
But I think the very fact that we're targeting strong market share in Q4 gives, you know, should give you some comfort that we're in good shape for the quarter.
Perfect. Thank you.
Our next question is from Simon Scaffer from Goldman Sachs.
Yes, thanks so much. I had a question on the overall market. Looks like Western Europe and the U.S. declined by about 1 million units from last year. Just wondering what your thoughts were as to how much of that is, frankly, just weak demand for the category in itself versus perhaps some sort of impact from cannibalization, specifically at the smaller screen sizes. That would be my first question. And then as to maybe how you think about the growth opportunity for P&D as a standalone category going forward. I hear your comments about larger screen sizes and migration towards that that can really differentiate. But I guess my question is, going forward, do you think that is a segment of growth on a standalone basis? Thanks.
Yeah. You know, on the overall market size and the effect of smartphones, it's really difficult to attribute and split it up in general economic environment effects and some sort of substitution. It's really difficult to say which part to attribute to what effect. You know, the fact that you know, I think there is a role for P&Ds for a long time to go. They are getting better. They are fit for purpose. Customers understand that. We see a significant proportion of second and third time buyers coming back to the market and re-engaging with the category. You know, generally speaking, the levels of satisfactions are very high. So if you look at Net Promoter Score for our products, we're happy with how we're doing there. So there is a lot of evidence to suggest that P&Ds and mobile phones can really live next to each other for a long time to come.
And what does that mean then in terms of future growth potential, you think, on an absolute basis?
Well, you know, again, it's difficult to say, but I would like to draw your attention that we, you know, we're not just a P&D play. We are actively broadening our revenue base. It's part of our strategy, as you know. We're more and more a platform company that's offering navigation and location services to motorists, and more independent of which platform we're doing that. So we're actively targeting P&Ds, but also mobile phones. We're targeting the in-dash market. We're licensing navigation content to the automotive industry. We're actively engaging with the handset manufacturers for licensing navigation content. You know, I think you need to see that in that broader context. Having said that, P&Ds will absolutely continue to play a vital role for innovation. It will remain the platform of choice for many, many customers for many years, and it carries our brand to a large extent, so there's a big incentive for us to continue to do well and continue to invest in the category and also invest in marketing and communication around in the category. But I also acknowledge that we are, and you have to acknowledge that we are broadening the revenue base in general.
Yeah. And my second question actually is adjacent to that. If I maybe you could just elaborate a little bit more as to what you think the revenue potential is, sort of on a 12-month perspective perhaps, on two recent design wins that you had. Number one, HTC, which is announced this morning. And then secondly, and as to how you thought about the profit contribution potential from AutoNavi in China. Thank you.
Yeah, I can't comment on individual arrangements, especially not in relation to the HTC deal, unfortunately. I think on the joint venture we've created with AutoNavi in China is significant because it gives us a good quality Chinese map. It also gives us a partner that is already active in the automotive industry and helps us to make our product offering complete in a way that it can cover Europe, North America, and China. I think it will be difficult for us in China to play in the P&D market as standalone activity. That's going to be very challenging. But we do see meaningful opportunities for TomTom to be successful in the automotive industry in China, which is a very fast-growing segment of the market. And teaming up with AutoNavi in that space will help us to accelerate that development.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Our next question is from Andrew Heyman from Independent Mind.
Just a couple of questions. I was wondering, what sort of P&D volumes do you have outside North America and Europe? And then a second question, I was interested in some details on the Renault deal, i.e. for the connected in-dash systems. Can existing Renault users upgrade to the connected version? And then also, once it becomes a subscription model, do you split that with Renault?
Let me handle the second question first. That is the Renault deal. What we have announced in Paris last month is that we will start shipping connected infotainment system in the next generations of Renault cars, and they will gradually phase out our existing offering. In the not-too-distant future, a significant proportion of Renault cars, also in the volume segment, so the smaller cars, will be equipped with a navigation and infotainment screen that is also connected. So those cars will ship with a SIM card and a modem and are geared up to connect to our servers and then receive real-time information. Most importantly, of course, traffic information and speed camera information, but also local search, weather information, and so on and so forth. The model is a model whereby initially those services will be part of the purchase price of the car, and then after the trial period runs out, Renault drivers can extend those services on a website or through their dealer, that revenue, there is a revenue share between Renault and TomTom. I can't elaborate how that exactly works, but there is a variable part after the car has been sold, and there is a revenue share between TomTom and Renault. The drivers, the Renault cars also start to contribute to generating traffic information. So we expect a gradual improvement, again, of the HD traffic product in its own right. So that is a useful side effect of this arrangement. And I think it's significant because it's the first volume deal in the volume segment of the market that is pointing to connected cars, and it will teach us a lot of how consumers interact with their technologies, what are the sweet spots, what are the things we can do to improve that and extend this type of functionality in a broader sense.
Okay, let me just answer the question about P&D volumes outside Europe and North America. It's a growing percentage of our overall volumes, as you would probably expect. And I think, you know, we're roughly running at around 10% of our volume comes from outside those markets.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question is from Alexander Patrick from Exane BNP Paribas.
Yes, hi, thanks for taking my question. Just firstly, a little bit on the mix that we'll see in Q4, particularly in the U.S. If I remember well, previously there was a low-end loaded quarter for you guys, but my understanding is that maybe this time around you will be staying away from the ultra-low-cost P&D segment in the U.S. Is that something we should assume? And also if you could comment a little bit on the channel situation going into this holiday quarter. Thanks.
Yeah, let me take that. I mean, I've said already that we will we are targeting a relatively high market share in Q4 in North America. And, you know, what we see in North America, as Harold's already said, is that more and more people are buying 4.3-inch rather than 3.5-inch product. So I think there's a kind of natural movement, if you like, towards that category, which I think you will see in Q4 as a continuing trend. But, you know, overall we will play to a more, you know, to a higher market share than we've seen in previous quarters if our plans go as we're expecting in Q4 overall in that market.
Thanks. And the channel?
Inventory in the channel, it's fine. There's in balance, nothing to comment on there.
Thanks very much.
Our next question is from Wim Gille from RBS.
Yeah, good afternoon. This is Wim Gille from RBS. A couple of questions. First, with respect to the P&D markets outside of Europe and America, you rightfully say that it's a growing percentage and it's at the moment roughly 10% of your own volumes. Can you give us a bit of feeling on what kind of momentum you see in these markets, in particular like China and Brazil, which are potentially huge markets with a low penetration rate? So where are we in terms of the cycle with respect to navigation, and what kind of navigation solutions are these customers using? So that would be the first question. And the second question, with respect to AutoNavi, can you give us a bit more flavor of what exactly you are going to contribute to the joint venture in terms of capital investments and technology? And also how you protect the technology, mainly.
Yeah. Okay, I mean, with regard to where our P&D sales are outside Europe and North America, you know, we look to Australian market, some Southeast Asia, some Latin America, and Eastern Europe. So those are our main markets. We see potential to open up into some new markets next year as well. I mean, volumes are typically modest but growing. So, you know, we don't want to get too carried away with it too soon, but there's definitely potential there. As Harold said, you know, the Chinese market for us and P&Ds is a little bit harder to fathom out where we can play and where we can play in a way that where the economics makes sense, to be honest. So I don't think we should be looking for TomTom in that market in the near future. You know, we would rather focus on the automotive side in China for the time being. So that's kind of the picture of where we play, and I think you'll see us going in, as I say, to a couple of new markets next year, but really building on the bait, otherwise building on the markets that we've already started to go into.
Okay, and in terms of preference, market preference, are people outside of, or let's say in these outer regions, more looking towards in-built, or are they more looking towards smartphones or PMDs? Is there any kind of different consumer behavior versus Europe and the U.S. in that respect?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, every market is different. And the good thing about what we've got is that we can play at different levels because, you know, we have content, we have the application, we can operate on the smartphone, we can operate in Dash, we can operate on the PND. And I think, you know, it's a question of what makes sense in particular markets. I mean, the markets I've already talked about, you know, the successes we're having are principally with the PND, although we do sell on the smartphone in some of those markets as well, but the PND is the main part. And we have some automotive business as well starting.
Okay.
Yeah, the automatically the first stage of that joint venture is to make content available in the standard TomTom format and leverage the contracts you already have in the automotive industry and make an offering for China. So there's some engineering work involved, but it is the first stage of this joint venture is primarily a go-to-market driven organization. It's obviously interesting to see if we can extend that collaboration further. We first got to focus on commercialization of our existing contracts and extend them to China.
Okay, and then a final follow-on question with respect to HTC, in particular because you're shipping on Android smartphones. Is there anything significant or why would HTC have a deal with TomTom for an Android platform, as there's already Google Maps navigation on there?
Yeah, that is. You're right. That is a significant development, and we're very happy with that. Clearly, HTC is a very successful smartphone company. They're very keen on bringing their customers the most, the best user experience possible. They want to control that user experience as well and fully integrate that, and they felt that they wanted to have their own location-based services application as part of their application suite. So that is an interesting development for us.
I mean, they like what we have, they like our content, they like the services we offer, and it gives them independence. So, you know, I think it's relevant when you think about the opportunities on the licensing side.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Our next question is from Mark Schwarzenberg from ING.
Yeah, a couple of questions left from my side. First of all, again, on the Forex impact, could you give us a bit of flavor on what we can expect on current rates for Q4, except not the impact on the gross margin, but more on the one-off line? And also maybe could you give a bit of a sensitivity of a 10% decline or increase of dollar against the euro, what kind of impact we would see on your P&L? That's the first question. The other question I have is on the licensing part, a bit of weakness there in the Q3 numbers. Could you give us any detail on why that is and what we should expect going forward, maybe also with the HTC deal coming up, what we should expect from the licensing part? And then lastly, your statement on expecting a good market share for Q4 in the U.S., should we read that as that there is again a deal with Walmart in the pipeline that will impact Q4? Those are my questions. Thanks.
Yeah, okay. Let me sort of firstly talk about the Forex side. I mean, hopefully I've given a fairly good amount of information and detail in the slide that I provided, which should help you to think about the impact that the movement in rates has on our gross margins. But broadly speaking, you know, we're going into Q4 with a dollar-euro exchange rate of 1.36. We've seen the dollar weaken a little bit more so far this quarter. The impact of that is that our trading in Q4 compared with trading in Q3, which was at 127, you know, that will improve our gross margin by, you know, a percentage point or a bit more than that. So, you know, it is significant. With regard to the one-off line, I mean, basically how that works is that we buy option contracts 9 months out against our forecasts on purchases and sales in dollars on a net basis. And, you know, clearly those option premiums are amortized over the life of the options through the P&L. So there's a kind of time value that always ticks through. But then over and above that, it's determined by how the exchange rate moves. Now, you know, so far this quarter, we've seen a little bit more, a further weakening of the dollar. And that would have, if that was still at the case at the end of the month, that would have a small negative impact on our derivatives portfolio. But, you know, I don't have a crystal ball, so I can't tell you exactly how that will develop over the quarter. But, you know, we saw a major movement in the dollar in Q3. It would probably be a surprise to have anything at that sort of level in Q4. But, you know, I don't have a crystal ball.
Okay. No, that does help.
Okay. And I think your other question, you had a question about licensing. You know, the weakness in licensing in Q3, the biggest part of that was the fact that, you know, third-party PND manufacturers who we license to are suffering from lower PND markets and lower market share. You know, I would like to hope that we've kind of, certainly for the time being, got to, you know, more or less the bottom of that, but, you know, we have to wait and see how that develops. Also in licensing, within automotive, you know, licensing, the licensing part to third parties is growing quite strongly. You don't see that in the licensing, what we classify as licensing, because it's within automotive. That's growing well. We also have a wireless and internet business, which is growing, and government and enterprise, which, you know, we think in there is opportunity to drive higher performance there as we go forward.
Yep.
That's what's going on in licensing.
Very good. And then my last question on Q4 with Walmart.
I think I've said everything we're going to say on Q4 trading in North America. I don't want to mention specific customers.
No, but the point is taken. Okay. Thank you very much.
Our next question is from Luke Van Beek from Petercam.
Yes, I had one remaining question on the sales of services and content to the automotive customers. The Renault contract has now been around for some time. Do you see any change, any difference between the automotive customers and the P&D customers with regards to map purchases, especially regarding the upgrade from a regional map to a pan-European map?
Yeah, you're rightly pointing out that we're shipping, or Renault is shipping with regional maps. And a proportion of those drivers are upgrading to European maps. That's correct. And that's happening. We see that coming through, which is good news, and it tells us that upgrade mechanism works. People are prepared to buy over the Internet. It's a novelty for the automotive industry, but people manage to do that in a user-friendly way. And as a result, the map sales on the Renault contract are on average higher than what we see in on P&Ds, but it's, of course, a much lower volume that we're talking about.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question is from Hans Slob from Rabobank.
Yes, hello, Hans from Rabobank. A couple of questions. First, could you elaborate a little bit on the pipeline you have for, let's say, new in-dash deals? Are you talking to many more automotive customers, and you know, what's the situation there? Secondly, also on the Renault contract, do we now have hit, let's say, the full run rate, or do you still believe that the take rate can improve further from the high levels you reach now? And also maybe a little bit more on the mechanics of the deal with HTC. Is that a pay-as-you-go, or do you get paid per handset, or is it a lump sum? So a bit more clarity would be useful. Thanks.
On the automotive deals, I have no other deals to announce. That shouldn't come as a surprise. But we are active in the space, but nothing to report new here. On the Renault attachment rates, they are high, certainly compared to the average for the industry, they're very high. Going forward, I see some opportunities for further increase that, but it won't be to 100%. You know, we're talking about in the near future, it will be go up. Maybe we can get another 5 to 10 percentage points of higher attachment rates, but that will be predominantly driven by Renault or Renault's customers. So Renault can influence that by equipping more cars with standard equipment, and customers can influence us by asking for those devices to be line fitted.
Yeah.
But the trend is positive. We're happy with the results so far.
Yeah, so I think in terms of the lion's share of the growth that you see in automotive from the Renault contract, we're kind of, you know, we're not quite at full run rate, I would say, but we're getting close. As Harold says, we could probably push the attachment rate up a bit higher and maybe roll out a little bit further into some other models and regions, but the lion's share is done.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. In terms of HTC, I'm afraid we are not able to give details about the commercials of that contract.
Okay.
You know, we just can't do that. Apologies.
Okay. And just maybe a final one. Again, let's say on Black Friday, of course, you did a very exceptionally strong quarter last year, also with the Black Friday deals. Should we expect the same magnitude in terms of impact, or would that be very difficult to achieve?
Well, as I said, you know, I think we've given you as much color and information on Q4 as we possibly can. So to reiterate that, we expect to grow market share in a strong quarter, but I think I need to leave it there for the moment.
Okay, great. Thanks.
We now have Martin Dendriver from SNS Securities.
Yes, good afternoon. Two questions left. One with regard to the market share in Europe. We've had four quarters of sequential increases, and I know it's just one quarter, but can you explain the decrease from 49 to 48%? Should we read anything into that?
No, you should not read anything into that other than normal fluctuation where you go through some product transition.
So solely related to product transition, then. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think, honestly, I don't think there's anything else to it than that.
Okay, and then final question. If you look at your balance sheet, you've shown that your net leverage is already down to 1.2. It will probably go down at year-end. Should we take into account possibly some share buybacks or buyback share purchases to cover the option program?
Our focus is on continuing to delever for the time being. I mean, we're still carrying a significant amount of debt. We're paying it down well and on schedule, and I want to continue to do that for the foreseeable future. So I think it's too early to talk about anything else at this stage.
Okay, thank you.
We will now have our last question from Nicholas van Stackelberg from Macquarie.
Yes, and thanks for taking my question. Software sales declined by 1% year over year despite significant efforts going into this part of your business. Is it really only the P&D map sales?
Sorry, Nicholas, can you repeat the question?
I hope you can hear me. I said software sales, it looks like they declined year over year by 1%. And this is despite significant efforts on the team's part to grow this part of your business. Is it really all to blame on the P&D map sales?
Oh, right. Are you talking about licensing? Yeah.
Not just licensing. I mean, you are kind enough to break down your sales by hardware and software.
Content and services is growing, right? Overall. Content and services is growing, and within content and services, the drivers for growth are map sales, are live sales, are smartphone application sales, speed cameras, automotive licensing is also growing. The third-party licensing to PNDs is decreasing at the moment, but that is the main, that's really the only area that we don't see either flat or growth right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and could you say that when we look at your goodwill that remains on your balance sheet, can you allocate that to that part that would refer to the PND map business? Is there anything that we need to start thinking about?
Not at this stage. I mean, we perform a full goodwill review every year, but the way goodwill is allocated, at the time that we bought TeleAtlas, what we felt TeleAtlas would do for us was would enable us to grow our own business, our own content business, as well as obviously, continue to drive revenue in the existing licensing business. So, if you like, the goodwill is allocated more broadly across the TomTom group, if that helps. And, as I say, overall content and services sales are growing.
Okay. And on the amortization, there is a discrepancy between what we see in the cash flow statement and the P&L of about 4.2 million euros. Can you maybe walk us through where this discrepancy comes from?
Nicholas, would you mind if I gave you a call back afterwards on that one? Because I need
not
to just check exactly what you're referring to there, because I'm not aware of that. And it may be just what's in each category. Let me give you a call back on that.
No problem. Thank you very much, Maria.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's question and answer session. I will now turn the call back to Richard Picard for closing remarks.
Okay, thank you all for participating in our results conference call today. I hope to see you on 11 November in Amsterdam. And operator, you can now close the call, please.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.